Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds. And first of all, many apologies for being 24 hours late, as I've tweeted out already. Jeff, I was messing about at a theme park, I'm not going to lie. I was on the rides with the kids.
I was checking out all the tweets that were talking about some theme park, and I'm like, God, totally clueless about what the heck they're talking about. Was that you?
That was me, and I had one from I had one question from George Jennings, who said, "Are you not too old for theme parks?" And as I pointed out, you've only got to walk to the ride and sit down, and the ride takes care of everything else. So. And Amir Alipour, he pointed out that you would have done the podcast while sitting on the rides, Jeff. I think he's suggesting that I'm taking a bit too much time off.
How'd Georgie like it? Did he have a good time?
He did. In fact, he was the reason I ended up on all of those rides. He was dragging me on all of them. So, yeah, it was. I came away feeling a little bit queasy afterwards, but I think that might have been something to do with three or four hot donuts and, you know, all, hot dogs and all of that other stuff that goes with theme parks.
Well, there may be some Charger fans that are feeling a little bit queasy right now.
Huh? Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about that because, you know, speculation. We're getting to our state of the franchise, by the way, in just a little while. We've got your questions in the mailbag. We're going to take Carolina, Baltimore, and Dallas in the state of the franchise. But first of all, some news. And there's still this growing speculation about a potential Philip Rivers trade for the San Diego Chargers. I mean, this team has won 19 games over the past two seasons, Jeff. They've won a playoff game. Do they need to be worrying about moving on their veteran quarterback?
Well, in all decisions that you make regarding personnel, the first thing that you have to consider is what is the long-term ramifications for the football team. Not only short-term, but long-term ramifications. Now, you got to understand, Rivers is a guy whose window is closing. Now, I still believe he's one of the better quarterbacks in the league, and I don't like tossing around that term elite because that speaks to only a very few guys, but he is definitely a guy who is one of the top quarterbacks in the league. If you're San Diego, you have to now weigh risk to reward if you expose him to a trade. Now, they've got to feel, if before they trade him, they have to feel one of two things. Either very confident with the backup that he can step in and move the football team, or that they're going to get a draft slot high enough that they can access a quarterback in the draft. And really, Neil, this quarterback is a two-quarterback draft.
Yeah.
When you look at as guys that could potentially come in and start right away in the National Football League. Or they're going to have to package the trade in such a way that they gain access to a quarterback that they like.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. One of the teams that's been speculated about is Tennessee.
Well, he's from that area, right?
Yeah, he's from that area. He's from the Southeast. He played at North Carolina State. His dad's a high school. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why you'd say, not a bad idea. Wisenhunt is the head coach in Tennessee. But it's also interesting that last week a report surfaced out of Tennessee talking about how they think that Zach Mettenberger may be the next Tom Brady, sixth-round pick who, you know, ends up being a lights-out quarterback. I think that's a tall, tall ask. But is that not disinformation that Tennessee's putting out there right now, because they are in a situation where they're negotiating a trade here? So this is all the intrigue of the offseason that we all love so much.
The one thing I would add, I mean, San Diego have worked out Marcus Mariota, so if they, you know, if they wanted to move up to Tennessee's number two spot, they've worked out the quarterback that would potentially be sitting there at number two. The only other point I would make, Jeff, is you think, well, it's top 10 quarterbacks don't get traded, but as you said, Philip Rivers is getting up there in years. And also, go back a couple of weeks, a few weeks ago, would any of us really have predicted Jimmy Graham being traded to the Seattle Seahawks? It seems like the trade is coming back into fashion in the NFL.
Yeah, it really is, and I think a large percentage of that has to do with the way the salary cap works. And, you know, all of the draft boards will be adjusted based upon, you know, these potential trades here at the end. You know, I think it's really a fascinating time. If I'm Tennessee, you wonder about that because you've got a team that's in the midst of a rebuild. Now, you have access with the second pick to one of these two better quarterbacks in this draft, and they're going to be long-term, what you would consider a long-term solution for your franchise. So, again, if you're Tennessee, do you make that deal to get the instant jolt of Philip Rivers, but recognize that here's a guy at towards the end of his career who's had an injury history.
Yep.
And so, you know, how much more does he have? Can you get three seasons out of him? And, you know, again, so again, that's all stuff that these guys are sitting in their rooms right now, the personnel guys, the general managers, the presidents, the owners, frankly, because when you're talking about quarterbacks, you're talking about guys that typically the owner wants to get involved in, you know, the face of his franchise. So it's a long process, these trades, and it's really it sends shockwaves throughout the entire organization.
Certainly got some Chargers fans nervous, and doesn't seem like any player is off limits in the NFL. We'll keep an eye on that one in the coming weeks. Let's have a look at a couple of retirements, and Jeff, most recent of these two was Ike Taylor retiring after 12 years and two Super Bowl wins with the Steelers. He said once Troy Polamalu made his mind up, which happened since we last recorded last week's podcast, that he would follow suit. So there are two veteran defensive backs from the Steelers. And actually, if you add in Brett Kiesel as well, you're looking at, as you mentioned when we touched on the Steelers in the state of the franchise, a changing of the guard defensively there.
Yeah, and you know, it really goes beyond the playing field. It now, you talk about Dick LeBeau leaving, all right? Mm-hmm. And now you talk about Polamalu leaving and Ike Taylor leaving and Brett Kiesel leaving. There's an awful lot of great defense, an awful lot of wins, an awful lot of history that is now moving on in Pittsburgh. And that's, frankly, that is the nature of the business. Now, what will be interesting to see is how does Butler ascend to a coordinator role? How does he put his stamp on this defense? You know, and then again, you factor in the shocking news that Worlds ends up, you know, retiring should be the peak of his career. That's a tremendous, tremendous amount of turnover on the defensive side of the football, and that's going to mean, you know, Mike Tomlin and his staff, you know, they're going to have to get healthy fast. When I say healthy, they're going to have to get good fast on defense. Luckily for the Steeler fans, that offense should be potent enough to carry them early in the season until they can kind of get their feet under them defensively.
A couple of things caught my eye. Jeff, Ike Taylor, of course, well, both these guys, one club men, which you don't see so much of, in the NFL today. They were Steelers for the entirety of their career, which is great to see. And I think with both players, the time had come to hang it up. I think Ike Taylor was getting beat a bit more. And I guess Jeff Polamalu's freelancing style was okay when he had the athleticism to bail himself out of trouble, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, and you know, you mentioned those three guys. Kiesel, include him in that mix too, because there's a guy that was really, really a fine player at the peak of his career. But as your skills start to erode, and you know, once you've played, like, these guys are 10-year guys and over. And so you think about that. 10 years of the pounding of the National Football League, 10 years of the wear and tear on your body, 10 years of the grind that it is through the off season, and you know, that's an awful lot on a person physically. Those guys at the end of their career were getting it done because, you know, their veteran, you know, reps, yep, the amount of football they've seen. They understood what plays were happening before the plays started because
good for
of the formation.
So.
Yeah, all that stuff. But eventually, eventually your body, your legs don't allow you, even though your mind can see it. You know you got to close on that ball. You just can't make that play anymore. And that's a hard one. That's a hard one for everybody, especially these kinds of guys, because in each of those cases, Ike Taylor, Polamalu, and Brett Kiesel, you're talking about warriors, guys that loved football. And you know, even though you love football, you know, we say it all the time, we all love football. Football doesn't love anybody. And football doesn't care about how many years you've played or how much you how passionate you are about the game. Or football just moves on. And, you know, again, we're at that stage with those three athletes. Tremendous guys, tremendous in the locker room, all three highly respected in Pittsburgh. But it's now time to move on.
Polamalu won two Super Bowls as well. He was an eight-time Pro Bowler, Jeff. Defensive Player of the Year in 2010. But I did read with interest that he doesn't rank in the top 100 in interceptions, but he had some very timely interceptions. You think about the interception return for a touchdown against Joe Flacco in the AFC Championship game. Is Troy Polamalu a Hall of Famer for you? Because maybe not being in the top 100 players in career interceptions will be a thing when they make a case against him. What do you think?
Well, I think there'll be that speculation, or there'll be that current that will be out there. But you have to look at what his impact was beyond the interceptions. And the, you know, you're talking about a guy when they needed a play. They needed a play, whether it was a tackle, whether it was an interception, whether it was a sack, whether it was a, you know, knocking a ball out. He was phenomenal for being a guy when the Steelers needed a big play on defense, finding a way to make a big play. And if you're a fan of that division, you think about how in your lifetime you've seen two of the greatest safeties to ever play the game in Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu go head to head in that division. And, you know, there was some speculation here last week, you know, kind of threw it out there about who was the best of the two. Was Ed Reed better than Troy Polamalu? To me, I that's like 1A and 1B. You can't really delineate between the two. Each had his own specialness about him. Each was a great leader on his football team. Each was a great guy. Here's the thing that about those guys, like Polamalu, a lot of what he made him, Troy, such a guy that you wanted to see succeed was the way he handled himself off the field,
yeah.
The way he cared for his community, the kind of guy he was. Ed Reed, same guy.
Yep.
Here's a guy that comes out of Destrehan High School in River Parish in Louisiana, and every summer would run a football camp in Baltimore, and all of the proceeds of his Ed Reed football camp went directly to Destrehan High School.
Man.
Those are the kind of guys that we don't talk about that enough, and those are the kind of guys that both Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu were.
It's funny when you can have different types of leaders on a team. When I spent some time with Ike Taylor, he was vociferous, he was loud, he was the life and soul of the party, he was, you know, he was trying out his English accent, all of that kind of thing. When we had Polamalu up on stage at the Regent Street event, all he wanted to do was wave to the crowd. He said, well, I don't really, you know, I'm not comfortable talking in public. He was a much quieter, shyer kind of guy, but, you know, you're two contrasting figures there, but both absolute leaders for that defense. And Jeff, just wrapping up on those two, I mean, just on Polamalu, you talk about quarterbacks and pre-snap reads. I mean, he must have been an absolute nightmare to try and read.
Let me tell you my favorite Troy Polamalu story, or one of my favorite Troy Polamalu stories. All right, you know, John Lynch, who was was a great player for the Bucks, and then on with the Broncos late in his career, a safety, one of the best has played in his era. He comes, after his retirement, he comes to visit a practice during training camp of the Steelers. And Polamalu walks up to him. Now they had played at the same time, right? But he refers to him, he goes, Mr. Lynch, would it be possible for me to talk to you about what you read before a play?
Huh.
This is one football player to another. And that's how respectful Troy Polamalu was. He would refer to one of his basically,
peers.
You know, one of his peers as Mr. Lynch. So John Lynch tells that story, and I laughed so hard when I heard it, but that is Troy Polamalu.
And I did see, sorry, Joe, we are dragging a bit on this, but I think these are two great players who've now headed into retirement. Ike Taylor, there's sort of talk that he might head back to Pittsburgh as a coaching intern this summer, and you know, I guess you like to see players heading back onto the field as coaches, do you?
Well, there's a guy that's got, you know, 12 years of experience playing on the corner, playing in that defense, understanding. That's a very sophisticated defense to play in, particularly for the secondary guys, because they have so many adjustments that they need to make based on formation and motion and split and all those other things. So here's a guy that if the Steelers bring him back to training camp can really spend some time with some young corners that are going to have to develop fast for the Steelers, and I think that would be a great move. The thing that I've heard is that Ike is really considering one of two options now that he's in his post-playing career. One would be to go back into coaching, and the other would be to get into the media, because he, like as you said, he's very well spoken, very, you know, he's a guy that projects himself well, so he would be outstanding, I think, in either of those two. Let me just tell him that he's got far less hours and far less heartache when he's in the media than he was when he's coaching.
Every player I've spoken to who's moved into coaching has said, wow, I didn't realize the hours the coaches put in. We used to go home at night.
Yeah, home at night. You don't know where home is until it gets to be the season's over with, and then you figure out where your home is again.
Especially, well, you're one of those quality control coaches. They work those guys. We're going to get onto the state of the franchise in a few minutes. Carolina, Baltimore, and Dallas. And we'll take your questions in the mailbag on this week's edition of Inside the Huddle. But one more story I wanted to dig into with you, Jeff. I noticed that Brandon Albert, the Miami Dolphins left tackle, who tore his ACL in the second half of last season, one of the best left tackles in the game, has been boxing to get back into shape. Now, he may not be on the field for their off-season workouts and mini camps, and training camp is still dangling out there as a possibility, but should be back for the start of the 2015 season. But it got me thinking, Jeff, I wonder what other, in your experience of over 30 years as a coach in the game, sort of other sports you've seen players do to get into shape. And I guess when you first started out, players weren't, with, I guess maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but they probably weren't working out as much in the off-season as they are now.
Hey, now, you be careful now.
I'm not saying it's black and white or anything.
I'm not going back to the days where they used to put down their beer and their cigarette and go to training camp.
Jeff Rockney.
No, I tell you what, Neil, this is really interesting thing you bring up, because when we talked about that before the show, you know, I started going through my mind thinking about back into the day when, you know, that first kind of crossover training that really happened. And as you said, in the past, a lot of guys, because they weren't making enough money, were working in the off season, and then they would come to those long, long training camps that they used to have, and they would play themselves into shape in training camp. Well, that's all changed now because the money's so big. These players don't need to work in the off season. Their job is 24/7, 365, is be a football player and take care of your body. So what a number of them have done, and the first guy that I can recall being a guy who really cross trained, if you will, took another sport or another discipline and twined it into his off-season program was a guy named Randy White, who was a tremendous, tremendous Hall of Famer defensive tackle for the Cowboys. Yep. And he got into martial arts because the hand techniques that he found in martial arts were very similar to the hand techniques that he needed to be a great defensive lineman. And that actually went to the point where the Cowboys had in their conditioning staff a martial artist that came in and worked with the defensive lineman on those things. Now, that's not such a you know, long jump now to the present day where, as you mentioned, Brandon Albert is in the ring boxing. Think about the sport. It requires you to be up on your toes. It requires footwork. It requires endurance. It requires the ability to punch and body control. All of those factors are critical factors when you look at an offensive lineman. Interesting, Jay Glazer, who, you know, you see on television, big NFL media personality, he has an MMA gym, a mixed martial arts gym in Los Angeles.
That, Jeff, isn't it now?
Yeah. And though there are a number of players who go out to Southern California and train with Jay Glazer in mixed martial arts. And I think that kind of satisfies the players, you know, kind of lust for physical contact, if that's what you want to call it. Plus, there is carryover benefit to them, because this, frankly, I don't care how you slice it and how many times they want to change the rules, this is still a martial sport. This is still a physical contact sport.
And Jeff, with the mixed martial arts, is it purely a fitness thing, or are we seeing players that need to use their hands? Is that what we're seeing there?
I think it's a question of all those things, because in mixed martial arts, obviously, being aggressive, being able to defend yourself, being able to use your hands, being able to play, like, for example, a guy shoots on you to take you down, you got to play the low block. There's so many corollaries to what you do on the football field, plus your balance, plus your endurance, plus, I mean, there's just so much that a guy can get out of that. Now, if you're a strength and conditioning coach for one of the clubs, or your personnel guy, you got to hold your breath a little bit, because you know those are dangerous sports. Mm. Guy can get hurt doing that, but it seems to be something that the players have kind of grabbed onto and really seem to enjoy. And you know, one of the things about the off season is these guys train all year long. Mm. So it's so mentally stagnating if you're just in there grinding away in the weight room doing the same exercises, the same sets, the same reps, the same, you know, the same program year round. This kind of cross training kind of refreshes them mentally, and it gives them something that will encourage them to get in the gym and get their work done.
That's why I've always felt it was a bit harsh, Jeff, when we've seen a couple of players in the past who got injured playing basketball. I mean, do you want the guy to be sort of active in the off season, or do you want him to show up out of shape? And you know, it's harsh, isn't it? Because sometimes you just want those guys to be, and you want them to be careful. I mean, you don't want them sort of doing too much of the jumping off cliffs like Tom Brady did a few weeks ago. But you do want them to be active people as well, and they're young guys.
Yeah. Yeah, they have to stay active, and they have to, again, find new ways to challenge and push themselves. And but you got to keep it fresh too. And I think that's probably the biggest challenge for a strength and conditioning coach in the National Football League, is he's got big guys that are training year round, and 6 months of that training they're getting pounded on. And how do you take that sore body and get it into the weight room and get it moving and get it rehab? Because so much of, you know, during the season, you're talking about what we call prehab, which are exercises to help ward off injury, and then rehab, which is exercises to help heal an injury. So, you know, it's those guys earn their money, those strength and conditioning coaches. They do a great job in the National Football League.
You joked about players putting down the cigarette and heading onto the practice field. I just love the days when Fred Biletnikoff, and he tells me that story whenever I see him coming over to London. But his breakfast, well, I said, what did you used to? It was like coffee and a cigarette. And then I'd go out to practice. You know, and I'd probably still be hungover. I mean, we shouldn't glorify that.
Yeah, then he'd stop. Then he'd stop by the honky tonk and pick up Stabler and drive to practice.
Exactly. But you know what? There's so much truth in that statement that it's unbelievable. Let's move on to our state of the franchise then, and we'll start with the Carolina Panthers, who finished 7-8-1. But that was enough to take the NFC South division. They had a horrible spell in the middle. What was it? 2, 4, 6, 7 games without a win. They went 6 losses and a tie against the Cincinnati Bengals. But then they ended with 4 straight wins to make the playoffs. Then they beat Arizona in the first round. And they didn't play badly up in Seattle. They ended up losing 31-17. So, Jeff, by the end of the season, I thought the Panthers had shown tremendous mental toughness. Their defense seemed to be back on track, and they had a running game. So if I'm a Panthers fan, I'm going to take that part of it into the offseason feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I think this football team, as much as maybe any that we talk about, reflects the head coach, the mm-hmm. personality of the head coach. And you know, they're not a flashy team. They're tough. As you mentioned, particularly mentally tough. They're a lunch bucket team. They get an awful lot out of guys, and that's Ron Rivera. And yep. I really give him credit for having really endured, frankly, two very, very difficult situations. One, you know, he gets a new GM who, you know, he's not Gettleman's guy when Gettleman came from the Giants, and so he has to endure a season of really uncertainty. You know, am I going to be back another year? So they lose all their wide receivers. I mean, everything. He's been through some adversity in Carolina. They go through that tough stretch that you talked about last year. But through it all, he's never wavered. He's never whined. He's never complained. And that's reflected in the play of his football team. And isn't it interesting that a guy who was a linebacker by trade, you know, on that 85 Bears team, he's got two of the best linebackers in the National Football League in Davis and Kuechly. So I think that's the strength of this team. If this team is going to go, though, Neil, I think to the next step, to the next level, there are two areas in particular I think Carolina needs to improve. Number one is left tackle on offense. They've got to find a way to protect Cam Newton. I think Cam Newton has shown now that he's maturing as a quarterback. He can make all the throws. He's physically what you want.
Yep.
And then they've got to get him some help outside. Kelvin Benjamin played well as a rookie, made some mental errors, dropped a few balls, but still, all in all, played pretty good doggone good football for a rookie. But there really isn't much around him. I mean, Philly Brown's like a three in most offenses. So they've got to get him some help.
Offensive tackle is a huge need, Jeff. When you look at at the moment on the depth chart, it's Nate Chandler at left tackle, or it could be Jonathan Martin, who flamed out in Miami and San Francisco, and Michael Orr has just not panned out. It didn't work out for him in Tennessee. He was surplus to requirements in Baltimore. So the whole offensive line is going to rest on finding a couple of bookends, I think. With Cam Newton, I was critical of Cam towards the end of last season. I remember we had a big debate in the Week 17 show on Sky Sports, and I had expected more from Cam Newton, production-wise. But I agree with you that he has all the physical tools, and he has, he has that. I think he's matured in terms of being a leader. I go back to the playoffs, Jeff. There was some inaccuracy there, which was quite alarming. So where are you on Cam Newton? Because I think put some stuff around him, you wouldn't be looking for another quarterback, absolutely. But also, he's not quite the finished product yet.
Well, not yet. But again, I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to ask anybody when we start making mention of Cam Newton, the question I would have is, show me a quarterback who's made more with less.
I think it's fair, and also he was injured, wasn't he, last year?
Yeah, I mean, he gets in an automobile accident. I mean, think about that. And that guy's in a neck brace laying on the freeway, and he comes back 2 weeks later and he's playing quarterback in the National Football League. That's some toughness there now. But I just think that as an organization, Carolina has to prove it to me. Again, as I look at the organization, they have to prove it to me that they're willing to go out and do the things that it takes to get to that next level. Because you say we've got a problem at tackle. Well, there were a number of teams that had a problem at tackle. And you let, for example, Jacksonville go down and outbid you basically for Parnell, the tackle from Dallas, who was a guy that could have definitely filled a hole for them and changed the entire draft for them, because now they don't have to look for a draft pick in the first round to fill that left tackle spot.
Yeah.
Right? And they can improve themselves at wide receiver. So to me, I'm sure Gettleman does have a plan, but I think he's probably being hamstrung a little bit by ownership in terms of not wanting to go out and spend that kind of money that it takes. But I'm going to tell you something. You never cut your way to a profit. You got to spend the money to get the players that it takes to win. And there's still no guarantees at that. But I know this, if they don't protect that quarterback a little bit better, he's never going to get to the next level.
And for a while, Jeff, I think there was an imbalance in how they were spending the money they were spending. They had money invested in three running backs, D'Angelo Williams, Jonathan Stewart, and Mike Tolbert. They were investing quite heavily at that time in linebackers. And if you look at the NFL, what is it? It's how do you pass and how do you affect the pass that really win games for the most part. And they were almost a throwback. They were investing money in running backs and linebackers. Now you can say, well, they're trying to address that. They've re-signed Greg Olsen at tight end. They did draft Kelvin Benjamin, but for a while there was a period where they weren't doing that, and so that needs to be corrected in the long term.
I think you're right, and I think that's one of the things that Gettleman has had to clean up since he came to Carolina, and you know, but you look again, as I say, this offseason, Olsen to me is a top 10 tight end. I don't think he's an elite tight end, but I think he's a top 10 tight end.
Yep.
So outside, Benjamin shows he has the range, all the things we looked at when we talked about the draft last year, big, big catching range, athletic. He'll drop some. Okay, he was who he, you know, to paraphrase, he was who we thought he was, right?
Yep.
So, but now, where are they going with the offensive line, which is a definite need area, both depth inside and tackles, and where are they going with wideouts that can make explosive plays? That's where I think this team has to go to improve. They've got a formula on defense. They're going to play that defensive structure, keep the ball in front of them, be real physical, let the linebackers run, big guys up front to eat up gaps for them. I think they need another pass rusher. You know, again, with Hardy now going to the Cowboys, and really Johnson, their only real pass rusher, I think they need to look at a pass rusher if they can get one in this draft. So they have some definite needs that can be addressed in the draft, but really I wish, if I'm a Carolina fan, and I live with maybe the biggest one in America, and my son Koa, and I'm going to tell you something. He was wringing his hands through the free agency process, waiting for them to go sign somebody that would free up a spot for them to draft.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jeff. I would say they need offensive tackle, and you could go left and right tackle there. I think they need some outside pass rush because the linebackers are set. They did show some improvement in the secondary. Let's have a look at their opponents for next year. They play Atlanta, Tampa Bay, and New Orleans at home. Philadelphia, Washington, Houston, Indianapolis, and Green Bay at home. On the road, those three division opponents again, plus Dallas, the Giants, Jacksonville, Tennessee, and Seattle. Offense was 16th in the NFL last year, 19th in the pass. Defense was 10th, but I can see that defense was ranked sort of one or two over the last 6 or 7 weeks. They can get right back up there again. So I'm with you, Jeff. It's on the passing game, and I think they've got the quarterback to do it. I'm looking forward to seeing, actually, because he was banged up before that car accident you mentioned. He'd had a bunch of injuries all the way through training camp, all the way into the season. And it wasn't until really they got on that winning run at the end that Cam started running again, you know, being that dual threat that we got so excited about.
Yep. And I think, again, when you look at him, he's so critical, so important to that offense. You know, you got to find a way, and I here we go banging on the thing again, but I just really, truly believe it. You've got to find a way to keep him on his feet and let him use his athleticism and not, you know, they become so dependent on the running game. And when the running game's not there, because, again, they're not great up front on the offensive line. They've got, you know, they've had a stable of great running backs. Jonathan Stewart played better for him. I think a lot of people thought when he's healthy, he can play. Mm. But the issue is you can't ask the guy to do everything for 16 weeks. It's just too much of a load for anybody, including Cam. So I think if they can get some help on the at tackle, as you mentioned, and they can find some playmakers around him, a couple more playmakers around him, then he can take some of the heat off and really, I think, develop into being the quarterback that certainly Carolina and a lot of us think he can be.
Mm, that's the Carolina Panthers. They picked 25th in the first round of the NFL draft. Picking 26th are the Baltimore Ravens. Baltimore finished 10-6 during the regular season. Then they had a big win at Heinz Field in the first round of the playoffs, beat the Steelers 30-17. Then they really played New England tough at Gillette Stadium. They led twice by 14 points and then ended up losing that one 35-31. Offense was ranked 12th in the NFL. They were 8th in rushing with Justin Forsett emerging as a bit of a star there. Defense was 8th in the NFL. They were 4th against the run. Not too much to report in terms of free agency, Jeff, but there never is with these Baltimore Ravens. We'd probably expect them to draft well again. We would probably expect them to be competitive as they have been under the, you know, the John Harbaugh, Ozzie Newsome partnership for quite some time. What are your opening thoughts on the Ravens?
Well, I think this is a team that I really am interested in seeing how which direction they go now. You know, we talk about having an ascending team, a descending team, or a plateaued team. You talk about Carolina, I think, is an ascending team, has a chance to be an ascending team anyway. This team really interests me, intrigues me, actually, because there's some things that happened in the offseason that it's going to be interesting to see how they, you know, address them. First of all, you lose Kubiak, right, the offensive coordinator, who brought a system that was very friendly to Joe Flacco.
Yep.
And it took a guy in Justin Forsett, who was a journeyman back, and put him in a system where he became a really preeminent back in the league. Now, that is now no longer. Right now, Mark Trestman walks in with the West Coast offense, and now Joe Flacco is going to have to go through his third coordinator in 3 years. All right, so there's going to be some adjustment period there. How does this offensive line adjust to the different way that they'll run the football, the different pass protections that Mark will bring in? That'll be interesting to see. Outside, you're talking about really. You know, it was the Smith boys last year. Well, one of the Smith boys is headed for the West Coast. And so now you've got, I think Steve Smith is 36 years old as your number one. So there's need there. I mean, there's a vacuum there. That's just the offensive side of the football. You lose Owen Daniel, the tight end that played so well for him, and, you know, with Dennis Pitta hurt a lot of the time. And he's gone. That's some big voids. That's some big holes now in your football team. Go over to the other side of the football, and you have a really nice rotation at outside rusher with Doomerville and, you know, Suggs, and then you got Pernell McPhee. Well, Pernell McPhee's now in Chicago, so you lose that. Mm-hmm. Then inside, Haloti Ngata is one of the best interior defensive linemen in the National Football League, probably in the top four. You lose him. That's a huge chunk out of the middle of that defense that you lose. And I think they got exposed last year in the final analysis. You talk about a team that's 14 up on the Patriots twice in the championship game to go to the Super Bowl and can't finish it. Well, where did they look deficient? To me, they looked deficient in the secondary.
Yeah.
So there's still room to grow in that secondary. So I think this is a key offseason. But if you are a Raven fan, and I know there's a ton of Raven fans in the UK, if you are a Raven fan, it's one of those deals like, in Ozzie we trust, because the guy is amazing at finding football players.
Yeah, and he's going to have to, though, because that's a long list of people you listed there, Jeff, and the secondary did rank 24th against the pass in the NFL. Let's start on the offense, though, to break down some of that, what you mentioned there. Steve Smith is really the leading receiver now. He's 36 years old. If somebody's going to tell Steve Smith that he's passed it and that it's time to hang it up, it's not going to be me, because the guy's such a such a fighter, such a warrior. He's not going to believe that he's on the downslope, but they need more around him. You could get by now with Steve Smith as a very, very good number two for your offense, who's going to be a great person to mentor people in the locker room, but you don't want him to be your number one. And at the moment, with Marlon Brown being the other receiver, and then Michael Campanaro and Kamar Akin, you know, Steve Smith is your guy at the moment, so they are going to have to make a move there. And they haven't really drafted many receivers high in the draft, Torrey Smith being the last in 2011. After that, it's all sort of sixth or seventh round guys. So if you've spent all this money, it goes back to pretty much what you said about Cam Newton, Jeff. You know, you put a quarterback in place, but you've got to give them some things to work with. And Joe Flacco is probably well protected by that offensive line, but he's going to need some weapons to play with.
Yeah, he's going to need some weapons, and then Steve Smith's going to need some help. And, you know, 36, that's a really, really advancing age, if you will, for a wide receiver in the National Football League. Now, he takes great care of his body. He's in great shape. But again, that's, you're talking about years and years and years of pounding on your legs and your body. Plus, Steve Smith is not the kind of receiver that Trestman typically wants. He typically wants that long body Brandon Marshall kind of guy. He's always had those kinds of guys through his career, and those are the guys who have flourished for him. So Smith can take that number two role, as you mentioned, if they can find themselves a number one guy. But those guys are, you know, especially guys that can take that number one mantle in an offense that is really really intricate, like Mark runs, as a rookie, that's a tough ask. But it may be a situation, that's the direction they have to go. like we mentioned, you know, there's so much loss and so little gain this offseason in that Ravens offense. I think it's really going to be intriguing, actually, to see how it fits out.
There are some young players to be excited about on defense. Brandon Williams is maybe the reason Helotti Nata is not there anymore. They drafted C.J. Mosley, who's impressed at inside linebacker. But I go back to that secondary, Jeff. I mean, they didn't. You know, Ladarius Webb and Jimmy Smith are, you know, missed time in the past. Are they enough, or do you need to add bodies back there?
Well, first of all, Ladarius Webb's got to be healthy, and second of all, you know, they're not. They don't have enough, right? They don't have. Who do you have to beat to get to the Super Bowl in the AFC? You got to beat New England, right? You got to be built to beat New England. They're built to beat Pittsburgh, right? You know, they're physical, yada yada yada.
Yeah.
Now, but to get over the hump that they need to get over is that you're talking about New England, and you better be able to have three corners that can play against New England, and you better have a big guy who can match up against, you know, Gronkowski and Manuanui, the tight end. So that's not their strength right now. They need help in that back end. I think, you know, one of the reasons why they do typically right now finish lower in against the pass is the fact that they are so committed to getting to the quarterback, and they get those guys exposed a lot in man to man and in zone blitzes where you burn a zone, and you can give up plays that way. But they put the premium on, and always have, number one, stop the run, number two, get to the quarterback and hit the quarterback.
You still happy enough with Flacco as your quarterback? Flipping it back over to offense?
Yeah, I am. And I think one of the things I like about him is his unflappability. I mean, you know, again, you're talking about a guy now who's going to go, as we said, through his third coordinator in 3 years. And, you know, that's unsettling for a guy, and especially a guy right now who should be just in the prime of his career. So I think it's really important for Baltimore to create continuity for him, and then again go out and get him some more weapons outside where he can get the ball. And then Pitt has got to be healthy. Pitt has got to bounce back and be healthy for him, because that tight end will be a critical position. Again, you saw what Trestman was able to do with Martellus Bennett in Chicago. So if a healthy Dennis Pitta really helps that offense.
We talked about in Ozzie Newsome we trust, in John Harbaugh they trust as well. Jeff, just a word on coaching to wrap up with the Ravens.
I just think he's one of the really good ones in the league, and one of the ones that maybe gets a little bit under the radar. You know, he's had success. They've been through all kinds of change. You think about the players that have gone. You know, we just mentioned the Steelers and the Hall of Fame players that they've lost. Well, think about the guys that have exited Baltimore in during the Harbaugh term. You know, some of the best that have ever played the game at their position, and they find a way to win. Right? Somebody came in and played when Ray Lewis retired. Somebody came in and played when Ed Reed retired. You know, you're talking about great, great, great players. And, you know, as Doomerville and those guys now, Suggs, get to the end of their career, this is what Ozzie does so well, is he typically has guys behind him now. C.J. Mosley, you don't put him in the same sentence with Ray Lewis yet, but it's not such a drop that they can't win.
That's the Baltimore Ravens. Then let's move on to the Dallas Cowboys, who picked 27th in the upcoming NFL draft. Cowboys went 12-4 during the regular season. They beat Detroit 24-20 in the wild card round, then suffered a painful loss at Lambeau Field against the Green Bay Packers 26-21, with the Dez Bryant catch that was then wasn't. Offense ranked 7th in the NFL, 2nd in rushing, 16th in passing. Defense was a vast improvement. It was the worst in the NFL in 2013, improved to 19th last year under Rod Marinelli. So they offered a contract extension to Jason Garrett, which I think we both heartily applauded. He's a very good coach and an even better guy, I think, Jeff, when we look at what we know about Jason Garrett. They've lost a couple of pieces. They lost DeMarco Murray, obviously, Jeremy Parnell, as you mentioned. They did franchise tag Dez Bryant in the off-season, brought in Darren McFadden. Actually made some... Cowboys made some good under-the-radar sort of free agency pickups, Jeff. So where do you stand with the Cowboys?
You know what? The Cowboys, to me, I just really think this is a football team that, you know, you look at the pieces and you say they should be a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
They really, really should. I will give them credit. I really think that Jerry, in the last 12 months, has done some pretty doggone good things to help his football team. He, you know, they helped Monty Kiffin out the door. But stayed with Rod Marinelli. So it wasn't, again, another drastic scheme change. They went from the 3-4 under Rob Ryan to the 4-3 under Monty. It was a complete disaster. But rather than junk everything and throw the baby out with the bathwater, they said, what we'll do is, you know, we'll put Marinelli in the coordinator's seat and gently transition, if you will, into another style of defense. Now, they still play Tampa 2 as their lead, but they're more aggressive. They're doing some other things with Rod Marinelli, who I think is one of the better coaches in the National Football League. So I give Jerry credit there. Then additionally, you know, he franchises Dez, which you have to do because that guy is such a great player. Now, he also was willing to go through the agony of watching DeMarco Murray leave. Sometimes you can't have everybody. Even if you're Jerry Jones, you can't have everybody. That's the great thing about the National Football League and the salary cap and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So he goes out and gets a guy who has the pedigree, although he's never had a chance to really perform at the high level. You can blame the offensive line in Oakland, coaching in Oakland, or him. It doesn't matter. But Darren McFadden may be the guy who can step in, and he won't do what Murray did, but he certainly can be a first-level back. There's also Peterson looming out there. So I think he's done some really good things. They've shored up what was 6 years ago, 5 years ago, a bad offensive line. And now they're one of the better offensive lines in the National Football League. They've kept coaching continuity, which is, I think, really important, particularly at a place like Dallas. So I applaud Jerry Jones for what he has done, and I think it's going to be truly interesting to see what direction now they go in this draft. They go out and do a very Dallas thing, which was give a second chance to Greg Hardy, who's persona non grata for his personal life in Carolina, but can rush the passer. And, you know, Jerry says, we're going to give him an opportunity to show us that he, you know, can be a good citizen and still rush the passer. So, you know, if that plays out well for him, that's a huge get for them.
A couple of things I want to touch on, because you've kind of gone across a lot of the Cowboys there, Jeff, and I think we are looking at a team that's still a contender. Talk about Tony Romo in a moment, who came off a career year, but I think something you touched on then, which I think is important, is there's patience with this team now as well, with Jason Garrett. They've allowed Jason Garrett to grow as a head coach. If, go back, I don't know, maybe 2-3 years ago, there was all this, he struggles when the game's on the line and his clock management goes a bit awry. And you know, maybe it was just stuff with a young coach who was learning to deal with being on the sidelines. But here they are now with what I think is a pretty accomplished coach who's much more experienced, much more rounded, and they've handed him a new contract, 5-year contract extension. So they allowed him to grow, and that doesn't always happen in that sort of knee-jerk reaction world of the NFL.
No, but what I'm talking about with Jason, that's the hard job now. I mean, you're talking about, like I said, a guy that's an owner who's got his own radio show. The only owner that I know has a radio show that talks about his football team in very concrete terms. Who's healthy, who's practicing, how they're practicing, what he thinks, right? Well, that's like having two head coaches, you know, in a city where football is 24/7 and everybody's into the Cowboys. So to be able to handle that And then, you know, Jason Garrett is a Princeton graduate. He's one of the smartest guys I know. And he also is a guy with a very, very low ego quotient. So he's one of the rare guys that could handle that situation. Now, think back on this now. Who's been through there? Jimmy Johnson couldn't do it. Had success, but couldn't coexist with Jerry and Jerry's ego. Barry Switzer couldn't do it. Bill Parcells couldn't do it. You're talking about three of the best coaches that have ever walked the sidelines. Barry Switzer wins a Super Bowl and multiple national championships. Now, you may not like his style, but you can't argue his success. Jimmy Johnson wins national championships in college and Super Bowl championships, and Bill Parcells takes how many teams into the Super Bowl? So, again, none of those three could coexist with Jerry Jones. Jason Garrett has found a way inside his own personality and without losing his own personality to do that. And I think that's an incredible juggling job. And it has given that organization some continuity, which they so desperately needed. You know, you think if you're a Cowboy guy, you think back, well, the Cowboys were always the beacon of stability when Tom Landry was there for a million years.
Right.
Well, you know, then Jerry comes in and the world changes. So, I give this team credit. I really do give this team credit. And I, you know, we're going to talk about the quarterback. And the thing I give Tony Romo the most credit about is Tony Romo has been willing twice now to renegotiate and restructure his own deal so that they can get better players.
Well, that's one
in Dallas.
Yeah, that's one thing I wanted to talk about. My impression of sort of seeing the Cowboys up close. Got to go out to training camp last year. Spent some time with Jason Garrett, got to talk with him, and just on Jason Garrett, you know, he was a Cowboys quarterback. His dad was a scout there for a number of years, so I guess Jason was as well prepared as anyone would be for going in and being a head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. But with Tony Romo, Jeff, we've seen so much over the years. Yeah, you know, Romo the goat who lets the team down in the fourth quarter. You know, the fact is he's got outstanding numbers in the fourth quarter, and really he's the reason this team wins more games than they lose for a lot of years. But the one thing that struck me was, and Tony Romo's coming off a career year, is Tony Romo is now an assured leader and a proper franchise quarterback in my mind. I mean, he was always a leader when you see it in the locker room, but it kind of looked like he was sometimes a little bit goofy, but I don't know. I just feel like he's grown. I know he's 35 years old, so he's, you know, he's not a young pup when it comes to an NFL quarterback, but I feel like he is a true leader of this team. And he looked, whenever I dealt with him or whenever I was around him or saw him, he was assured, he knew how to handle himself, you know, and that carried over onto the field as well.
I think he's grown, like you say, a tremendous amount. Here's a kid that comes out of Eastern Illinois really with no expectations, really. I mean, no expectations. And he got thrust into a situation early in his career, and Parcells was his first head coach. He gets thrust into a situation early in his career where he has to start. And one of the great things that happened to him was having Bill Parcells early, because Bill Parcells told him one time, you don't want to be a quarterback that's in the media. You don't want to be I think he used the term Hollywood quarterback.
Well, he had those celebrity girlfriends, didn't he, Jeff?
Yeah, and that's exactly where I was going. Yeah. Then all of a sudden, Parcells leaves, and we get into a new, a kid that's a young kid with money and fame and future and all that stuff. And now he's dating Jessica Simpson, and he's on the cover of all these talk magazines. And, you know, he takes a holiday, a well-publicized holiday to Mexico during an off week. And the Cowboy fans just ripped him because they said, no, Roger Staubach wouldn't have done that. He'd have been studying his playbook at the Cowboys facility. So he set himself up for some of it, but I think through it all he's learned that, you know, the media is the media, and you as the Cowboy quarterback are always going to be scrutinized at a higher level than anybody else. Maybe any other quarterback other than maybe the New York media scrutinize those guys in the National Football League, and you know, I'm sure that's left some scars on him, but he's learned from it and has emerged out the end of it as being a good leader. I agree with you. I think he's one of the better leaders at the position in the National Football League.
looking at his targets, obviously Dez Bryant, we talk about, as you know, can play like a man among boys. Do you feel like Jason Witten's still got some mileage left on the tires, Jeff?
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, it's getting down to that, they're getting threadbare. You can see it in the way he runs. It's really tougher now. You know, he doesn't move around like he did. Still incredibly competitive. Still a guy who knows how to get himself open in space. His issue now is his ability to separate against man coverage. He relies on that body of his to shield the ball from defenders. Luckily, he's got a quarterback who typically can put the ball there. They have such a connection, the two of them. You know, they're best of friends off the field.
Yeah.
And, you know, they really, it's almost like there's a this you know, mind connection between the two of them. They just know where they work. I think the guy that again, it was a key offseason signing for the Cowboys is Cole Beasley. And his ability to be that receiver in the slot that means so much to them when they go to three wide receivers. I think that, you know, that's a great story. The kid is a phenomenal story. And, you know, you saw him last year. I think he had 35 catches and really in key situations gave him a guy that was really a tough matchup for nickel corners in the league.
Where are the needs, Jeff? Secondary? They gave up a lot of big plays still in the secondary, didn't they?
Yeah, you know what? You look at them. I agree with you, Neil. I agree with you 100%. I think this is a team that's going to have to go defense in the draft primarily. I think they're going to have to go corners if they can find them. You know, there are some guys in this draft. The Cowboys, the issue is going to be whether they're going to be around when the Cowboys draft, you know. But, again, I would say corner. I still think they need some help inside. You know, in the interior of the defensive line.
Yep.
You can always use pass rushers. But this is a Cowboy team that I think, you know, if they can get some guys healthy that were nicked on defense last year and, you know, can take that defense up one more notch from a talent standpoint, particularly in the secondary and corner, then this is a team that certainly has all the things that you look for in a Super Bowl contender.
And that was going to be my question. The final question, they play at home against Washington, the Giants, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Carolina, New England, the Jets, and Seattle. On the road against those NFC East opponents, plus New Orleans, Tampa Bay, Buffalo, Miami, and Green Bay. When you go to Lambeau Field in the divisional round of the playoffs and you almost beat the Packers, then your next step up is championship game or beyond. So do you feel this can be a Super Bowl team, Jeff?
I think that's got to be what I agree. I think that's what every team in the National Football League, that's their aspiration. But realistic aspiration is that for the Cowboys. Now, it's obviously they got that far, they got that deep, they did that many good things last year. Now it's got to be, you know, take the next step. And I think this is a team that if they can get a couple things done now in the draft, if they can, you know, I hate to make mention of it, but that Peterson thing just fascinates me. If they find a way to get that done, I know he wants to play in Dallas. That could be a huge piece. And this is a team, look at the division. What do they have to do? They have to win that division. Well, to me, New York has a ways to go. Washington's a mess still. Philadelphia, a lot of questions in Philly, a lot of potential in Philly, but a lot of questions in Philly. You would have to say odds-on favorite right now, it's Cowboys and Philly in that division.
All right, let's take a couple of quick questions in the mailbag to finish off this week. Jeff, this is a good one from Matt McGlone, who says, should more teams stick to taking the best player on their board instead of filling a perceived position of need in the draft? Where do you stand on this when you're drafting, that kind of thing?
I think it depends on a couple of things. Number one is, how deep is your need and how deep is the draft at that position?
Right.
Typically, first rounders are guys that they take at positions of need because there's enough players around at that spot. Now, you can also make the argument that you use free agency to fill your position needs and you draft the best player available in the draft. I think that we've seen enough examples of, particularly at the quarterback position, where teams say we need a quarterback and they draft, or what we call overdraft, a player. Well, that usually doesn't work out very good. I mean, we've seen so many guys crash and burn but that were overdrafted at quarterback. I think, like I said, there are a number of teams that have made free agent acquisitions in the offseason to fill positions of need, and now they're in a position to now go out and get the best player in the draft. You know, once we talk about Jerry Jones, there was one famous quote he made when the Cowboys were really going good. He said, "We're just drafting for backups now." Well, that really bit him in the tail too,
yeah.
Because they had a couple of poor drafts, and all of a sudden guys start to retire, and you got a bunch of dead money against the cap, and can't go out and get free agents, and the Cowboys went through that real dry stretch. So the good teams, the teams that particularly draft well, they draft first of all to fit any specific need where there is an impact player. You don't take a third round guy that's projected and draft him in the first round just because he's in a position where you have a need, because that's a recipe for disaster. If you can't get a free agent that way, then you take the best player available.
All right. This question from Doug Gillies, who says, how does Michael Crabtree signing affect the Raiders' draft plans, or does it mean it was always going to be an edge rusher in round one? So Crabtree has signed a one-year deal with the Raiders worth $3.2 million. He can earn another $1.8 million in incentives. When you look at Oakland's depth chart of receivers now, Jeff, it's Crabtree coming off only one season, full season removed from torn ACL. Then it's James Jones, Rod Streeter, and Andre Holmes. I still say they go wide receiver with that fourth overall pick.
I agree with you. I really do agree with you. I think that you've got to look at Crab as a guy who has never ascended to the number one, position. I think he's a functional two or three. I think there's obviously questions with his knee. It's a cap-friendly contract that he signed. It's good for the Raiders. It gives them a veteran receiver who's big. I'm not a big fan of the guy per se. I don't think he's a number one, but I think it's a positive depth move for the Raiders. I think the Raiders are going to take a receiver with that first pick, and there's a bunch of good ones in this draft.
This is a good question from Liam Holmes. He says, what's better, Jeff, a weak offensive group with a top-level quarterback or a strong offensive group without a top-level quarterback?
That's one of those questions that you look around the National Football League, and it comes down to, if you gave it to me and you said to me that I had to either have a really elite quarterback or an elite group around a very poor, if you say poor quarterback,
yep.
I'm going to say give me the elite quarterback, because I think the way the rules are structured now and the way the game is developed now, you can get more out of guys that if you have an elite level quarterback. You think about Andrew Luck, really. That's the guy that I think about when you go that direction. As I think he elevates the level of play of the players around him just because he's so good at that position, that he gives you a chance every game, where there are guys who have, been great quarterbacks. Cam Newton has, I won't say he's elite, but he's got all the qualities of an elite quarterback, but he doesn't have the supporting cast. Mm-hmm. So I, again, would always want that guy. You always want to start your argument with the quarterback.
I mean, we haven't done the state of the franchise for the Indianapolis Colts yet, and we'll do that in the coming weeks, but I'm with you on that, Jeff. It shows the power of an elite quarterback, because I do think that might be a team that has a losing record without Andrew Luck, and they got all the way to the AFC Championship game. So you can't stress the importance of that position enough, can you, in today's NFL?
No, and you look at what he was able to do with guys. Now, I'm not saying these are pedestrian guys, but these are guys that, if they don't have him, what are they? And yeah. I think they're guys. They're not special guys. And he's a special guy.
Yeah. Look at the running backs he had, Jeff. I mean, Tip Zuerlein and Trent Richardson. I mean, it was, and he's working with all those kind of guys. One more question here. It's from Liam, who says, what was my favorite ride at Alton Towers? It was the ride home. It was the ride home, Jeff. I was absolutely knackered. But, I made it back in one piece.
Oh, that's funny.
Jeff, here from Mark Roberts. I just wanted to ask, he says, if the Rivers to the Jets rumors, I hadn't actually heard of Philip Rivers rumored to the New York Jets, He said, if Rivers to the Jets rumours are to be believed, is this a good move for either of them? I actually think a top-level quarterback going into the New York Jets would be relatively happy with what he sees around him now in Eric Decker, Brandon Marshall, Stephen Ridley in the backfield. The Jets aren't, they're a quarterback away, aren't they?
I think they're very close to being in that discussion, right? Mm-hmm. Like you say, they have to have, if they can find somebody to distribute the football, they've done a good job. This Jet organization has done a good job this offseason of going out and filling holes. You know, you talk about, we're just discussing the draft. Well, you know, if you're the Jets, you got a definite need at corner. They address that right away in free agency. Mm-hmm. You got a definite need at wide receiver. They address that in free agency. Now, where are they going to find that last piece of the puzzle, which to me is the most important piece, and that's the quarterback.
All right, Jeff, that'll do us for another week. Jeff, I'm not about to make a Joe Namath-type guarantee, but I think we might be back in the studio soon. I'm feeling like I'm going to get out of this downstairs toilet and get back in the studio. I think our listeners deserve it. So bear with us, folks.
I think so, too.
Yeah, please bear with us. Thank you for downloading this edition of Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. It's a USP content production. Until next week, say goodbye, Coach.
Aloha.